What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Marius, Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison? Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. My name's Charlie Robinson. I'm your host. Thanks for checking us out. I know you have literally 850,000 other podcasts you could be listening to, so the fact that you're listening to this, I certainly do appreciate. You can check us out on the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. I'm also on Facebook. Just got back on Twitter under a new name, Macroaggression. The links will be in the description for that. You know, Twitter, they can't keep me down forever, kick me off once, but I come back. I tell you, I'm not giving up that easily. And the topic for today is we're talking about banking. It might not be sexy, might not be glamorous, but it is the most important and one of the most dangerous components of this global enslavement system that we're operating under. It's very devious because you just think about, oh, it's a bank. You know, I'm going to take my money to the bank. Nothing bad is going to happen. You know, everything's protected. Hey, in America, it's FDIC. It's insured by the, you know, by the federal government. Yeah, right. Okay, that's good. They have about 2%, enough to cover about 2% of deposits. So do not hang your hat on the fact that the FDIC is going to come bail you out when there's a run on the banks, because they will not be there for that. They will take a hike, and it's only going to work if you've got like a small regional bank and something goes wrong and it happens. But some systemic banking collapse, good luck to you. You're done. By the way, for people that are don't know this, once you put your money into a bank, it becomes the property of the banks. Right. You become an unsecured creditor. So it's important to remember that that money that shows up when you look at your online bank statement, that money that's in there, that's the bank's money. They own it. It's their money. If they want to take it, if they want to close their bank and keep it all, they'll do it. You'll be an unsecured creditor in line. And you won't be the first in line to get your money, just so you know. So there is something to be said for taking a bunch of cash and hiding it in your mattress. I know it sounds kind of ghetto, but look, at least you know where it is. This is not financial advice. I'm not licensed to give financial advice, by the way. But you don't have to be licensed to give financial advice to understand the rules of the banks. So be very careful about that. But I'm not talking about regional banks, really. These are not the banks that you need to be concerned with. It's the banking system in general that is the problem. Central banking, to be specific about that. And people don't know about it. It's not their fault. First of all, it's really boring. Banking is super boring. But it's also the information about how banks work is actively suppressed. You don't learn about it in school. You get a rudimentary education on it coming up, you know, and maybe in high school you learn a little bit about it, but not to the point where you actually understand it. In fact, Henry Ford, from the founder of Ford Motors, said, "It is well enough that people of the nation do not understand our banking and monetary system, for if they did, I believe there would be a revolution before tomorrow morning." So ultimately, it is a banking cartel that controls the world. We talked about who the octopus is and what are the tentacles. Banking, financial control is one of the tentacles of the octopus. It is the most dangerous one. I know it's tempting to think that the military component is the most dangerous because that leads to direct, overt, equation to death. And so therefore, military should be the most dangerous. And of course, it is very dangerous. Don't misunderstand me. But the banking component is devious and secretive, and it has a control of everybody. It's the reason why some people live on $2 a day. Not because they're just, you know, not because they're unlucky. I mean, they are unlucky, of course, but it's not just because of that. It's because the banking system has created this way that it runs on scarcity and supply and demand and lack of supply, and supplies can be cut off, and it creates unlevel playing fields for certain countries and certain currencies and certain people. America runs, well, America's US dollar is the reserve currency. Therefore, it is in first position as far as dominant currencies being used around the world. I don't know that America is necessarily in control of the banking industry, though. It seems like they are. But I think that the city of London, not London, but the city of London, which is a city state managed all by itself, like the Vatican or Washington, D.C., the city of London is the third component of that. And I was in the city of London a couple months ago, and one of the things that you can tell when you get in there, even if you don't know, there's signs that say you are now entering the city of London. But one of the things that you can tell just from the architecture is that there are dragons everywhere. They've got dragon statues and dragon looking, you know, gargoyle looking things all over the place. And that's because they're guarding the gold. And also because the British are obsessed with lizards, probably because they're run by lizards, but that's another show. But really, the United States dollar has value because people believe that it does. It was backed by gold a long time ago. At one point, it was backed by silver. In 1971, it was taken off the gold standard by Nixon, and then it became backed by a promise. A promise of, we will drop some military force on your ass if you don't accept it, which is really what they're saying. It's and also, I would say, to a certain extent, it's backed by oil. It's backed by the petrodollar paradigm. And what that is that's the component that Saudi Arabia and the United States came to an agreement on, which is Saudi Arabia would agree to only price their oil in US dollars. Meaning, if you want to buy oil from the Saudis, you have to, in your some other countries, the UK, you have to convert your British pound into US dollars and then use US dollars to buy Saudi oil. And that makes it that there's a constant demand for US dollars, even though there can sometimes be a lack of interest in US dollars or a lack of trust in US dollars. It doesn't matter because you've got to convert it to US dollars if you want to buy this oil. That's the way the game has been set up. And that exchange was, you, Saudi Arabia, price your oil in US dollars, and we, the United States, will come to your defense if you ever get yourself into a military if you ever get yourself into a war or the beginnings of a war or something like that. And that has been the relationship between the United States and Saudi Arabia for a very long time now, 40, 50 plus years. But, and that's the reason why the United States looks the other way when Saudi Arabia does things like chop people's heads off in the town square for driving a car or stone women to death for having extramarital affairs when it was, when they were getting raped by somebody and then they stone the woman. This is that Wahhabist mentality, which is fucking bizarre to me. I mean, I can't understand. Believe what you want to believe, you know, whatever your religious inclinations are, you know, go for it as long as you're not hurting other people. But I think the Saudis have taken it to some bizarre level. But, you know, it has to do with banking. You know, the petrodollar arrangement, of course, is tied into banking. And, you know, it's the United States dollar is just some abstract form of currency. It's what it represents that's important. Because it's backed by military. It's now kind of backed by oil, although not officially. It's backed by a promise. Backed by a promise that the U.S. dollar will be there forever, and we promise not to print it up to infinity and make it worthless and devalue it, which of course they're doing anyway. And I think Jeff Berwick had a good take on this. Jeff and I are writing a book together. He's a friend. He's an anarchist. Anarcho-capitalist. He sees the world very differently. And he had this to say about the United States and capitalism. He said, people think what's in the U.S. today is capitalism. It's not even close to capitalism. Capitalism doesn't have a central bank. Capitalism doesn't have taxes. It doesn't have regulations. Capitalism is just voluntary transactions. What they have in the U.S. today, I call crapitalism. And I think Jeff's right. It's some weird hybrid form of capitalism. It's not actual capitalism, because in actual capitalism, what you have are marketplaces, and marketplaces allow for price discovery. I come to the market with my good. I have it priced at $10. Nobody buys it. Maybe it's overpriced. I lower it to $6. All of a sudden, people start to buy it. That's called price discovery. And we don't have that in marketplaces anymore, because what we have are artificial marketplaces. We have markets that are that people have their thumb on the scale, so to speak. You have all of these marketplaces like COMEX and Forex and LIBOR that have all been manipulated by big banks. I'm not speculating on that. I'm saying that they have been found guilty by courts, and they have paid billions of dollars in fines for rigging these marketplaces. They're all rigged. Stock market is rigged. Forex is rigged. LIBOR is rigged. COMEX is rigged. All the commodity markets are rigged. They're rigged. You ever see Trading Places? I mean, it's not rigged with Billy Ray Valentine rigging it, but it is. They're rigged by those crusty old men, you know, Mortimer. Mortimer's rigging marketplaces, man. Let me tell you, that's like Jacob Rothschild. You know what I mean? I think that might have been the inspiration for that character. This is but the banking system itself is, like I said, it's easy for people to sort of gloss over the importance of banks because, you know, we drive by banks all the time. Those are retail banks that you're driving. Bank of America, Wells Fargo, all those. Those are different. We're not talking about those. We're talking about investment banks. We're talking about central banks. And the central banks have been a problem for this country since the time of Andrew Jackson. And Andrew Jackson said, "You are a den of vipers. I intend on thrashing you out. And by the everlasting God, I will thrash you out. If individuals only comprehended the rank injustice of our money and banking system, there would be a transformation prior to morning." So these are guys that had an understanding and knowledge of what the banking system can be and what it really is all about. Now, the Federal Reserve Bank, it's what you hear, the Fed. That's the term for it. The Federal Reserve Bank is talked about as if it is a government institution, that it is a government bank. It is not. That is an enormous lie that is told by the media to the public. Ben Bernanke, Alan Greenspan, Janet Yellen, all these guys that Powell, who's in charge now, these people work for the Federal Reserve, and the Federal Reserve is a private bank. It is a privately owned bank. It's not a quasi-government bank like I was told in school. It's not a government bank. It is a private bank, and that is an important thing to remember. I submit to you a quote from somebody that would know a little bit about the Federal Reserve, Alan Greenspan, who's the former chairman. He said, well, first of all, the Federal Reserve is an independent agency, and that means basically that there is no other agency of government which can overrule actions that we take. So long as that is in place and there is no evidence that the administration or the Congress or anyone else is requesting that we do things other than what we think is the appropriate thing, then what the relationships are don't frankly matter. So Greenspan's telling you, we're in charge. The government can't overrule us. You could try to, but it doesn't matter what your opinions are or about what we're doing. We're going to do what we want to do because we're independent and nobody has oversight over us. Nobody has checks and balances. This isn't... Now, that's Alan Greenspan talking about that 15 years ago. But what about Congressman Lewis McFadden from 1932? This is what he had to say about it when he was delivering a speech to the House of Representatives. He said, Mr. Chairman, we have in this country one of the most corrupt institutions the world has ever known. I refer to the Federal Reserve Board and the Federal Reserve Banks. The Federal Reserve Board, a government board, has cheated the government of the United States and the people of the United States out of enough money to pay the national debt. Mr. Chairman, when the Federal Reserve Act was passed, the people of the United States did not perceive that a world system was being set up here, and that this country was to supply financial power to an international superstate, a superstate controlled by international bankers and international industrialists acting together to enslave the world for their own pleasure. Well, I would say that they enslaved the world for more than just their own pleasure. They enslave the world for control. Now, they have access to all the money in the world. It's not about money with them. It seems like it should be about money, and it's tempting to think that it's about money. But remember, the Federal Reserve can print up as much money as they want. They could print up $1 trillion, not tell anyone about it, stash it somewhere offshore, and use that money to finance their operations. And I would suggest that they have done that. But they use that money to control people. And that's what it's about. It's about controlling marketplaces. It's about controlling politicians. It's about controlling policies. It's about controlling the people. They use money as the ends to justify the means. I mean, that is what they're using the money that they print to facilitate control. But it's not necessarily about the money. It's about what the money can buy. So they use it for a variety of things. They use it to bribe politicians. They use it to rig marketplaces. They use it to put foreign leaders into powers. The banks are behind all of this. Don't for a second let the nice suit and the shiny tie fool you. They're criminals. They're gangsters. They're murderers. They have facilitated. They are the ones that kick off wars. This is serious business here. Just because it's done in a Brooks Brothers suit doesn't make it legal, doesn't make it business, doesn't make it politics. These are gangsters. Okay? To be clear about this, these people are seriously bad individuals. And you know, they don't answer to any governments. Think about that for a second. They are above the law. You'll never see, you know, George Carlin, I bring him up constantly because he was telling the truth. He was doing it in a way that really made a lot of sense when you go back and watch his stuff. He said, nothing's going to change in this world until we start hanging some of these fucking bankers. All right. And that's what he was talking about. And he is absolutely right. If Lloyd Blankfein from Goldman Sachs was hanging from a noose right above that Wall Street bull statue because of what he's done, or Jamie Dimon was taken out to the guillotine and had his head chopped off, and I'm not advocating for this, by the way, I'm just saying that if this happened, then you might see some reform on Wall Street. But what are you going to see? What are you expecting? These guys aren't going to jail. These guys aren't going anywhere except to a revolving door between Washington, D.C. and Wall Street. That's where they go. They walk that path, that loop between lower Manhattan and Washington, D.C. It's a well-worn path. They know how to get there. They take those Wall Street assholes and they put them in charge of the Secretary of Treasury, to take them and put them in charge of a variety of different departments inside, not just the Obama or Trump administration. The Bushes did it too. Clinton's had it as well. You know, you've got Paul Volcker in Bill Clinton's administration, who was knee deep in this stuff. Obviously Alan Greenspan, you've got Steve Mnuchin from Goldman Sachs, Department of Treasury. Now, I mean, these guys are criminals. Okay, criminals. How does Steve Mnuchin have $342 million? Well, he led the high frequency trading division of Goldman Sachs, which is basically a program that front runs trades and makes a fortune off of that by using supercomputers to put their trades in a fraction of a second before other trades that are following it. So if somebody's getting ready to sell a ton of stock, Goldman Sachs can front run that trade. Made these guys a lot of money. Also, Steve Mnuchin ran One West Bank. In California, which was hugely impacted in the mortgage meltdown. He's a bad dude, okay, with his Kim Jong Il glasses. Looks like a mafioso dude, and his wife and them jetting off and U.S. military planes acting like it's their own. I mean, all these people can go fuck themselves for all I care. Woodrow Wilson. Worst president ever, one of the worst presidents ever, said this he said this in 1916. This is 3 years after he signed the Federal Reserve Act. I am a most unhappy man. I have unwittingly ruined my country. A great industrial nation is controlled by its system of credit. Our system of credit is concentrated. The growth of nation, therefore, and all of our activities are in the hands of a few men. We have come to be one of the worst ruled, one of the most completely controlled and dominated governments in the civilized world. No longer a government by free opinion, no longer a government by conviction and the vote of the majority, but a government by the opinion and duress of a small group of dominant men. First of all, I think that statement is a lie. I think Woodrow Wilson knew exactly what he was doing. I think Woodrow Wilson was being blackmailed into it. He created the Federal Reserve Act, and he also started the Internal Revenue Service. And they work like this. They work hand in hand. The Federal Reserve private bank, born into existence in 1913. This is how the scam works. They create money out of thin air because they have the charter to do that was given to them by Woodrow Wilson. They create money out of nothing. I'm not talking about printing money. I'm not talking about the actual act of printing money. That's handled by the Treasury. I'm talking about the creation of money that is injected into the system. That is controlled by the Federal Reserve. So the Federal Reserve creates money out of thin air for the U.S. government. They then loan the money to the federal government of the United States at interest. So the government takes this money and then they borrow it. they could create it themselves. They could just get rid of the Federal Reserve and have the Treasury create this money at no interest, but they don't do that. Why? Because of the Federal Reserve Act, because they were tricked into signing it. So the Federal Reserve creates money out of thin air, loans it to the government at interest. Then the government has to pay that money back, or at least they have to pay the interest on that money back. So where does that come from? Where does the money to pay the interest come from? Well, at the same time they created the Federal Reserve Act, they created the Internal Revenue Service as the collection arm for the Federal Reserve. So there were, before 1913, there were no government, there was no national tax policy. There were forms of taxes, but you didn't pay your taxes on April 15th like you do now. That is a result of the Federal Reserve. So when you're writing that check on April 15th, or if you're looking at your paycheck stub every pay period and you're seeing how much is taken away for all that government taxation, you can direct your anger at the Federal Reserve Bank because they're the ones that put this in place. So the Federal Reserve creates the money out of nothing, loans it to the government at interest. That interest is then paid back with the money that the IRS collects from us and gives to the Federal Reserve. So they make money on the interest. Pretty devious, huh? You know that $24 trillion that the United States owes? Oh, we owe it to ourselves. No. No, 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 no. We don't owe it to ourselves. We owe it to the Federal Reserve, a private bank. Think about that for a second. All that money that's sitting out there that we owe, that we can't seem to do anything because we owe so much money. We owe that money to a private bank set up by a bunch of assholes in 1913. I have no problem defaulting on that debt. Completely. I have no problem ripping up any of the terms of that agreement. I have no problem if the United States government decided to invade the Federal Reserve banks around the country. I have no problem if they took all those people and put them in prison. I'm not a fan of authoritarian rule at all. But let's stop pretending that we actually owe these people anything. We do not. We have invaded countries for far less than that. I guarantee you that the United States government will not be paying that back in full. We still pay interest. We still have to make interest payments, though. They make interest payments, and that money comes from money collected through the Internal Revenue Service. The taxation on that, it is devious. But like all of these things that we talk about, all these control structures, they're devious but genius at the same time. I mean, you have to appreciate the simplicity of the scam. It's not very hard to figure out, but the fact that they're allowing it to happen is just bonkers. But it's been going on for so long that people just assume that that's the way it is. I mean, it is no exaggeration to say that the Federal Reserve is as federal as Federal Express. It's a private bank. And when you know that it's a private bank, it changes the way you view all of this stuff. To continue with Lewis McFadden, he said, the Federal Reserve banks are one of the most corrupt institutions the world has ever seen. There is not a man within the sound of my voice who does not know that this nation is run by the international bankers. Every effort has been made by the Federal Reserve Board to conceal its powers. But the truth is, the Fed has usurped the government. It controls everything here in Congress, and it controls all our foreign relations. It makes and breaks governments at will. Now, Congressman McFadden survived two separate assassination attempts, but later died under suspicious circumstances. I guess if at first you don't succeed, try again to kill the guy that is describing your banking scam and putting undue pressure on you in the public eye. One of the things that's really most disturbing about the role of central banks is that they are always involved in taking countries to war. There was... Ron Paul said once, it's no coincidence that the century of total war coincided with the century of central banking. They are tied together. because banks loan money to both sides. That's sort of the secret about it. It's not so much that a bank is going to say, you know, it's not, oh, an American bank is going to loan to America and then a German bank is going to loan to Germany. No. These are international banks and they loan to both sides and they love wars because wars are very expensive. And then afterwards, things get all messed up in the country that lost, and the central banks go in there because they've loaned money to these countries on the winning end and on the losing end. And the losing end, they go in there and they just take everything. You know, they just get their hands on whatever collateral they can grab, whether that's, you know, land, bonds, currency, you know, people, access to people, maybe even actual people, who knows. They get in there and just take whatever they can. And then they, of course, on the winning team, they get paid back by the winning team because they finance them. So they love war and they're always looking for an excuse to get us to war. And Cliff High, who is the creator of the Webbot program, said they are desperate to take us to war. Let me remind everyone again that there has never been a world war other than when we have had central banks. And central banks need war to purge both the populations and memories such that they can start their Ponzi schemes all over again. This is a well-known cycle. They do this. Let's take a quick break so that we can hear from the sponsors that make this show possible, like Delete Me. The tech giants make a fortune selling your personal information to all kinds of outlets for them to use as they please. Delete Me removes your personal information like name, address, age, phone number, email address, and photos of your home from leading data broker sites. Removing personal information from data broker websites reduces your online footprint and removes Google search results. These guys really understand opt-out and privacy policy, so you don't have to spend your time focusing on things like legal jargon. Delete Me has been featured in the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, NPR, and CNET. And with over 20 million personal listings removed, Delete Me is the most trusted and proven privacy solution available, so check them out by using the link in the description to see just how they can take back your personal information. Fiverr is an outstanding resource. If you need somebody to outsource some of your work to, or you just need specialized help with a project that you're working on, you need to check out Fiverr. They have a network of thousands of freelance experts in business, design, programming and tech, digital marketing, music and audio, video and animation, writing and translation, and so much more. Need someone to build out a website or help you grow your current business with a digital marketing campaign? You can find thousands of people ready to get to work on your project at a fixed price that you set at Fiverr. Your payments only released to the freelancer once you're pleased and approve the work you've received. If you have questions, you can call Fiverr 24/7. Just click the link in the box in the description. Start putting this army of freelancers to work for you. And Cash Advance. We are living through a very strange time filled with an unbelievable amount of uncertainty. We don't know what the world's going to look like weeks from now, let alone months from now. If you find yourself in a financial emergency and in need of money right away, you at least have an option with Cash Advance. You can submit your request online and receive an answer in minutes so that you will know where you stand and what programs they have available for you. Their online service is entirely free and works to find potential lenders in their network. So just fill out the secure online form and see which option works best for you. Look, I hope you don't need this service, but if you do during this crazy time in our lives, at least you know that you have another option with Cash Advance. Click the link in the description box to see what they have to offer. And with all of these sponsors, your support for them directly impacts and supports the show. We certainly do appreciate that. Now let's get back to the show. If you've had a family member affected by a war, or if you've been affected by war, if you've been involved in wars, you must understand that these wars are always financed and usually created outright by the central banks. It is, once you understand the strategy of central banks dictating foreign policy, you'll be in a much better position to understand what is really happening and what is heading your way. You know, Wall Street likes to use financial weapons of mass destruction, for, you know, lack of a better term. They create complex instruments, banking instruments, and then use them to set about to make money from them and also just destroy countries. Talk about something like derivatives, the derivative trades. Ben Bernanke was asked about that. You want to talk about a guy that is very evasive and not trustworthy at all? Ben Bernanke was the guy. He's just a compulsive liar. He said, he's talking about derivatives. With respect to their safety, derivatives, for the most part, are traded among very sophisticated financial institutions and individuals who have considerable incentive to understand them and use them properly. Let me tell you. So derivatives are basically a bet on a bet. It's a financial instrument that big institutional banks use and to bet on the outcome of other bets that they've made to hedge their bet or to push all in. But in their simplest description, they are bets on bets. But nobody really understands them. Not you. Not me. Not the banks, not Ben Bernanke, not Jesus H. Christ. Nobody understands them. They really don't understand derivatives. And the problem is they have created $1.25 quadrillion worth of derivatives that are floating around out there in the world. Bets on bets. Banks betting against themselves, betting against other banks, bets betting on one asset class versus another. And everybody is intertwined. When the financial system collapses, and it will collapse, the smoking gun will be derivatives. It will be the thing that has to do with pulling down the entire world economy, because there's not enough money to pay off all of these debts. The only thing left to do is to just wipe them all away and with some sort of jubilee, which is like a debt jubilee, something just wipes away all the debts. But that's not going to happen when you have a bunch of greedy bankers in control of it. And even if, you know, and you can't expect them to tell you the truth about what they're planning to do anyway, because you've got Ben Bernanke once again saying, we do not expect significant spillover from the subprime market to the rest of the economy or to the financial system. That's May 17th, 2007. Well, that's a lie. Of course he knew that there was going to be a spillover from subprime market. That's what took the economy down. He knew that. You know, you've got all these people running the Fed, graduates of Harvard, MIT, Columbia, Princeton, NYU, Brown, Yale, Columbia. Very important college or universities. And yet, every single one of them seems to get it wrong all the time. You've got how do these big dummies like Ben Bernanke, who can never see it coming, Alan Greenspan, same thing. I didn't see it coming. We had no reason to believe that there was anything wrong. This is we've got another quote here from Ben Bernanke saying, we've never had a decline in house prices on a nationwide basis. So what is more likely is that house prices will slow, maybe stabilize, might slow consumption spending a bit. I don't think it's going to drive the economy too far from its full employment path, though. That's what he said in 2005. That's exactly what it did. That's exactly what happened. Wrong again. How do these people keep getting it so wrong? For a bunch of smart people, they certainly do get it wrong all the time. Well, the answer is that they're not getting it wrong. They know exactly what's happening. They're telling us one thing and they're doing the other thing. They're telling their buddies at running the big banks something totally different. They're telling us one version of the story. But they are doing an end run around with their banker buddies to consolidate power and assets. All the while telling us everything's fine, nothing is, you know, there's no problems, don't worry, this is all normal. He says, I'd throw dollars out of helicopters if I had to stimulate the economy. That's how he got the name, the nickname Helicopter Ben. That is not a marketplace that is working efficiently. If you need to throw dollars out of helicopters to stimulate the economy, then you have an economy that is not working properly. I don't know why this is. Frankly, it would have been more beneficial to humanity if Ben Bernanke had thrown himself out of a helicopter. That would have helped things a whole lot better than just throwing dollars out, because we know where these dollars go. They don't go to Main Street. They go to Wall Street. That TARP, Troubled Asset Relief Program, that was launched, you know, that took $700 billion that Hank Paulson said, you know, if we don't get this money, you know, there's going to be rioting in the streets and everything. You know, where did that money go? Did that money go to the people to help them pay their mortgages that they were falling behind on, this that was taking this economy down back in 2008? No, it didn't go to them. It went to Goldman Sachs and Citigroup and all of these other institutions. Ben Bernanke also went on to say, one myth that's out there is that what we're doing is printing money. We're not printing money. That's exactly what they're doing. They are exactly printing money. That is 100% what they are doing. When Ben Bernanke comes out and says, you know, one myth out there is that what we're doing is printing money. We're not printing money. He's lying. And he knows he's lying. This is a flat out lie. You want to know what Ben Bernanke did with the, you know, the TARP bailout, the $700 billion? That's nothing. You think that's a lot of money? That's nothing compared to what the Federal Reserve was doing. They were handing out zero interest loans, or loans at almost zero interest, to all of these banks around the same time they were begging the US government for $700 billion. You want to know how much money they lent out to banks that you never heard of? $16.1 trillion. And here's who got it. Citigroup, $2.5 trillion. Morgan Stanley, $2.04 trillion. Merrill Lynch, $1.9 trillion. Bank of America, $1.34 trillion. Barclays, $868 billion. Bear Stearns, $853 billion. Goldman Sachs, $814 billion. RBS, $541 billion. JP Morgan Chase, $391 billion. Deutsche Bank, $354 billion. I mean, it goes on and on and on. It adds up to a total of $16.1 trillion. Just that 0.1 in the $16.1 trillion, that 0.1 is $100 billion. So when Ben Bernanke says one myth that's out there is that what we're doing is printing money, we're not printing money. Where'd you get $16.1 trillion from? You printed it and loaned it to the banks. Now, one of the things about the way the banking system is set up is a thing called fractional reserve banking. And my friend John Thor Snyson, I've interviewed him. That show will be out. He talks about how that system works. We can find that interview, and he goes into detail. But basically, to summarize, it works like this. When money is deposited into a bank, that bank can then take that money and loan 9 times more of that money out to people, because the mathematics behind it says that you've got to have 10% held in deposit. So whatever money has come in as the deposit, say it's $100, then they can loan out $900 because they've got, they can loan out $1,000 technically, but they've got $100 kept as collateral. And the thinking is not everybody's going to come in and ask for their money all at the same time. So it's not like you have to really keep everybody's money in the bank, because the chances of everybody coming in on Tuesday and asking for that money are almost zero, unless there's a bank run. And then everybody's screwed, but they don't worry about that stuff. So when you're talking about the Federal Reserve creating $16.1 trillion out of thin air to loan to these banks, as soon as those banks deposit it in their account, they can then loan out nine times that amount. So now we're talking about $100 trillion. We're talking about more than that, but $150 trillion or so. That is the type of money that will allow you to rule the world. And this is what we have allowed the Federal Reserve to do. There's no oversight by us. We didn't even know about it until years later. Ron Paul said, the regulations should be on the Federal Reserve. We should have transparency of the Federal Reserve. They can create trillions of dollars to bail out their friends, and we don't even have any transparency of this. They're more powerful than the Congress. You ever hear the term, the golden rule? He who has the gold makes the rules? That's the Federal Reserve. We are run by bankers. That's not code for Jews. You know, I mean, it's just not. It's banks. It's the bankers. We are run by the bankers. When you can create $16 trillion out of thin air and give it to whoever you want, well, That tilts the playing field quite obviously. And I think there's a really good quote that Thomas Jefferson said, and that is, if the American people ever allow private banks to control the issue of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks will deprive the people of all property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered. The issuing power should be taken from the banks and restored to the people to whom it properly belongs. And that is the truth. There's another interesting component to this central banking scam, and that is inflation. You hear about inflation. I know it's kind of like a snooze fest when you think about it, but what it is it's the price of everything is inflated. Everything gets a little bit more expensive, and that is because the value of the dollar is falling. The value of the dollar, the power, the buying power of the United States dollar right now is about 4 cents as a regard to when it was first created in 1913. A dollar was really worth a dollar. Now a dollar is worth about 4 cents. So that's why when you hear stories about, well, I was a kid, I used to be able to go to the movies for a nickel. That's what they're talking about. Things were priced differently because the currency had more value. As you inflate the money supply, like by creating $16 trillion out of thin air, it devalues the currency. There's more currency available, so therefore every piece of currency has less value because there's so much more available. If they were, you know, so they'll extend credit and create these bubbles where there's just money everywhere, and then the banks will call in a lot of that credit due, and people don't have it, and they don't have the ability to pay it back, and so they go bankrupt, and then the banks take back tangible assets. That's asset inflation, price inflation, and then popping the bubble, and then taking back tangible assets. That's a devious trick that the bankers learned a long time ago. This is how you get control and power. You wind up taking things away from other people and piling them up. Like I said, Federal Reserve has all the money in the world. They can print it at will. So it's not about money. It's about control. It's about control of who else has money and who else has assets. And you can inflate a bubble. If you know when it's going to pop because you're tied into those circles, you can make moves that remove you from that situation so that you're not hurt by it. But the common person is sort of just, you know, screwing around out there on the stock market can get destroyed by this. And the Federal Reserve knows that. They are run by psychopaths that are interested in controlling people. They're not interested in fair marketplaces. They're not interested in making sure that everybody has the ability to get a loan, get an affordable home, and all that. No, they don't care about any of that stuff. That's not even close to what they're in it for. They're in it for consolidation of power with the banker friends and the governments that play ball with them. And they have a really good racket going, and it works especially well because nobody knows about it. So when we talk about these things, when we talk about central banking. Yeah, I know it's kind of boring on the surface, but it is so important that we be educated about it. Because if we don't know what's going on with the banking, we are at such a severe disadvantage. We will get played, manipulated, we'll get talked into wars, we'll get dragged into all sorts of new financial shenanigans like derivatives and quantitative easing and you know, all of these things that are that get talked about on the nightly news, and most people kind of don't really know what's going on with it. It's by design. It's never been accidental. Carol Quigley wrote a book called Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. I'm going to read this. He said, "The powers of financial capitalism had another far-reaching aim, nothing less than to create a world system of financial control in private hands, able to dominate the political system of each country and the economy of the world as a whole. This system was to be controlled in a feudalist fashion by the central banks of the world, acting in concert by secret agreements arrived at in frequent private meetings and conferences. The apex of this system was the Bank for International Settlements in Basel, Switzerland, a private bank owned and controlled by the world's central banks, which were themselves private corporations. The growth of financial capitalism made possible a centralization of world economic control and use of this power for the direct benefit of financiers and the indirect injury of all other economic groups." So the Federal Reserve is part of a network of central banks that exist in almost every country. Any country that doesn't have a central bank, you better get ready for some drone strikes, because that's what they're all about. They're all about putting central banks in every single country in the world. There's only a couple of them that have held out. But they all report to the mothership central banks, and that is the BIS, the Bank for International Settlements in Basel, Switzerland, that Carol Quigley was talking about. This is the central bank of central banks. This is the most dangerous company in the world. Forget Amazon, forget Walmart, forget ExxonMobil or Monsanto or Bayer or any of these, you know, Lockheed Martin. They're all dangerous in their own rights. But if you had to pick one corporation to put out of business to save the world or to try and save humanity, it would be the Bank for International Settlements. They have all the money in the world. And their job is to make sure that all the central banks in the world are working in unison to sing the same song and sell the same message. And they have they were created in 1931, and in part to deal with the German reparations from World War I, or at least that's what they were told. But this is their mission in their own words, okay? "Fostering discussion and facilitating collaboration among central banks, supporting dialogue with other authorities that are responsible for promoting financial stability, carrying out research and policy analysis, on issues of relevance for monetary and financial stability, acting as a prime counterparty for central banks in their financial transactions, and serving as an agent or trustee in connection with international financial operations." So it all sounds very nice and normal and, you know, like a backstop for central banks. But that's not exactly what they do. They orchestrate the central banks, and they dictate when a bank is going to flood a country with currency, when a central bank is going to pull back and withdraw that currency from the market to cause a collapse. They are the brains behind this organization. They're very devious, but nobody knows who they are. Nobody talks about them. They don't get any mention in your nightly news. You probably have never even heard of them. And I think that it's fair to say that they would prefer it to remain that way, because what they are doing and the central banks that they are controlling, it's in their best interest for all of that stuff to remain under the radar. The only time you ever really hear about it is, you know, maybe at Davos or something, where all those guys get together and talk about world domination. I mean, talk about banking. That's when you might hear a little bit about the BIS, but for the most part, they try to keep that out of the press. And of course, that's because they have the ability to control the press. So nobody in the press is going to talk about the BIS if they don't want them to. That's just kind of a fact. I mean, the authorities in Switzerland have no jurisdiction over the Bank for International Settlements headquarters. Think about that. That's crazy. It's sort of like an embassy where Swiss officials, police, investigators, they need the permission of the BIS in order to even enter the building. I'm sure nothing shady is going on there. Huh? The BIS is exempt from taxes, naturally. Their buildings are defined as inviolable, which, whatever that means, and their employees don't pay income taxes on their gigantic salaries. The assets of the Bank for International Settlements are not subject to civil claims under Swiss law, so good luck trying to sue them. That's not going to go anywhere. And when their senior managers travel, they have diplomatic status, which means they can't be searched, their bags can't be searched, their documents can't be searched, and they are immune under Swiss law for life and for all the acts that are carried out while working there. I mean, what the hell are they doing in there? I bet the laws of gravity don't even apply there. It's that backwards, and that, you know, it's a lawless place. So why do you have to have all these laws preventing people from getting into your business if you're some upstanding company just doing God's work, right? Out there banking along and doing your thing. Well, it's because they're a criminal organization, of course, and they don't want you knowing what they're doing. They don't want governments knowing what they're doing. They don't want the media knowing what they're doing. And they sure as hell don't want you and me to know what they're doing. And what they are up to is got to be something very bad. If they've got the sort of, they have immunity for life. Think about that for a second. That is insane. I don't know where you get that. I mean, unless you've got, you know, pictures of the president with a goat or something, you know, then maybe you have some form of immunity. But for the rest of us, it's tough to come by to get that sort of status. But when you're the Bank for International Settlements, I guess, you know, you make your own rules. And Peter Joseph, the director of the movie, the documentary Zeitgeist, said, "The true terrorists of our world do not meet at the docks at midnight or scream Allah Akbar before some violent action. The true terrorists of our world wear $5,000 suits and work in the highest positions of finance, government, and business." If you ever read Zero Hedge, they had a pretty good quote about the BIS. "Over the centuries, there have been many stories, some based on loose facts, others based on hearsay, conjecture, speculation, and outright lies about groups of people who control the world. Some of these are partially accurate. Others are wildly hyperbolic. But when it comes to the historic record, nothing comes close to the stereotypical secretive group determining the fate of over 7 billion people than the Bank for International Settlements, which hides in such plain sight that few have ever paid much attention." Yeah, it's not limited to guys like Tyler Durden at Zero Hedge. And this is for people that know what's happening in banking. They're outraged by this, but you know, what are you going to do? What are you going to do about the bank that controls all the banks? I mean, governments are ineffective against it. You could, you know, launch like a bio attack or a nuclear attack, but their building in Switzerland is literally designed to withstand a nuclear attack. So, I mean, only kind of half joking, like, hey, you could nuke it. But like, they have even gone and taken the extra step to make sure that they're building is bomb-proof. It goes underground. So even they realize that there may come a time when people may want to take a nuclear missile to them to get rid of them. They're that dangerous. So, and of course, Andrew Jackson, who fucking hated the banks, and he made no bones about it. He had this great quote to say. He said, "Gentlemen, I have been watching you for a long time, and I'm convinced that you use the funds of the bank to speculate in the breadstuffs of the country. When you won, you divided the profits amongst you. And when you lost, you charged it to the bank. You tell me that if I take the deposits of the bank and annul its charter, that I shall ruin 10,000 families. That may be true, gentlemen, but this is your sin. Should I let you go on, you will ruin 50,000 families, and that would be my sin. You are a den of vipers and thieves, and I intend to rat you out." I mean, he is not messing around when it comes to the banks. He hated them. And because... not because he just kind of woke up one day and decided, "Oh, I think I'm going to go have it out for the banks." He understood how they operated, what they were trying to do, and why they were dangerous. And he rallied, you know, he railed against the banks like for years. That's what he was known for. But part of the reason why he was against them was because he realized that what they did was they rigged marketplaces in their, you know, to their benefit and at the detriment of everybody else. And when you're trying to run a country, you got to try and make it a little bit of a level playing field. That way people can know what to expect. People can start businesses and get jobs and participate in this game that we call life with some sort of hope that if they work hard and get lucky and do all the right things, that maybe they can succeed. Well, when the playing field is tilted like this in favor of the banks and the vast majority of people don't know that, then it's going to create obvious problems here. And that is what we have. And I'll end it with a quote from Paul Craig Roberts. He's the former Assistant Secretary of the Treasury under Ronald Reagan. And he had this to say: "In America today, there are no free financial markets. All the markets are rigged by the Federal Reserve and the Treasury. The regulatory agencies controlled by those the agencies are supposed to regulate turn a blind eye. And even if they did not, they are helpless to enforce any law because private interests are more powerful than the law." If you like this show, please share it with your friends and family. Get the word out there. If you want to connect with me, you can do it through the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. Thanks, everybody.